The Morning Rush podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Freedom Reserve. Please drink responsibly.
They're going to run and get that boot.
This game's still alive and the Hawks have a first down.
Who wants to talk football?
It's Ronnie Wingo, number 20. Touchdown, Arkansas.
They talked the bar.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast.
Clemson puts it to Alabama in a way that we have never seen. 44-16, Clemson is your national champion. No, I did not misspeak, in case you missed the game. 44-16, a 28-point victory for Clemson over Alabama. And frankly, I don't even know if it was that close.
Yeah.
Clemson could have scored more points in this game if they wanted to, because neither team scored in the fourth quarter. This was the end of the third quarter score, and it ended up being the final score. And, you know, I was sitting there last night, and I was watching this game, and it was weird. It felt uncomfortable to see an Alabama team, a Nick Saban team, get worked like this. I want to compare it to maybe where if it's like watching your big brother get beat up by a girl. Where you don't really, you never thought it would happen. You never thought there'd be any chance. But once they go at it and you see your big brother getting beat up, you're like, something's wrong here. Yeah. What's wrong here? Yeah. What, is he sick? Is he hurt? Is he faking it? What's going on? But there was nothing like that, because Clemson, I don't think I've ever seen a team perform at that level for that period of time against an Alabama team, which had been so dominant all season long and had done so many great things and had just destroyed opponents. I never would have dreamed in a million years that they would ever get beat by 28 points to any team, even Clemson, who's a really good team and obviously the best team in the country when they win this national championship. But I never thought I'd see the day where Alabama got housed in a big time, the biggest game you could possibly have on the biggest stage, where there wasn't really any major injuries, there wasn't any major problems as far as players getting suspended or anything like that. No, this was just one team without their best player, Dexter Lawrence, mind you, on the defensive line, putting it to Alabama in a way that we've never seen before.
Yeah, it's not the fact that Clemson won that surprises any of us. It's the margin of victory. And it's not just the margin of victory. If you just really watched the game, it was the domination of Alabama on both sides of the ball. We've seen Alabama lose, but it was always competitive. This game, as far as just the X's and O's, who whipped who, Clemson whipped Alabama. And that was the thing. None of us, the most surprising outcome is what we got last night. I mean, the first 8-9 minutes of the game, most of the first quarter, as entertaining a football game as you're going to see. Surprising that Tua throws the pick six, but you say, okay, that happens. And then,
because he came back and threw a touchdown pass.
Comes back in what, three plays? I mean, it was early into that possession, right over the top, boom. And then back and forth. What was it, 14-13, and then the field goal made it 16-14. And you're like, all right, here we go. And then that was it for Alabama. They were done.
Didn't score again.
16 points.
Gave up 30 straight points.
And you thought, okay, all right, we'll get to halftime. I remember making this comment to you watching the game.
That's right.
Halftime. Nick Saban's going to make some adjustments here.
He's going to break some headsets, and they're going to come back out firing.
Boy, I'd like to be a fly on the wall in that locker room. All the adjustments that are getting ready to be made. Well, whatever adjustments Alabama made, Clemson out-adjusted the adjustments. Because me and you scored as many points in the second half as Alabama did.
That's right.
And I don't know what to say about that fake field goal attempt.
Yeah, we're going to get
into that. We'll get to that later.
Yeah, but jeez.
It was the most surprising outcome you could possibly look at. And now you wonder. And it's an overreaction that the morning following the national championship game, that
Is Nick Saban done?
Are there major problems with the program? You overreact to think because it's so unusual, such an outlier. How did this happen? That the mighty Alabama got crushed the way they did.
During a season where people were saying this was the best Alabama team of all time because of the way they were beating teams.
How did the almighty Nick Saban let this happen to his team?
He got out-coached. He got out-coached.
But in your mind, you've got this perception of Saban and this program that these type of things can't happen to them.
Mm-mm.
If we would have sat here yesterday morning and known the outcome, I mean, as far as final score, but not the teams, 44-16, we'd have put everything we owned on Alabama.
Yep.
Well, I guess we were wrong about Clemson. It was going to be a big... This is the outcome that is total shock.
Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, yesterday, because I mentioned that, I felt like all the pressure was on Alabama in this game because of just how dominant they've been, you know, the way that they have been talked about in the national media. And Clemson, it's not to say that no one gave them respect, because I think everyone felt like they were the second best team, but they were never in the limelight the same way. They were never being talked about on the same level of Alabama at all. They didn't have a Heisman Trophy finalist. They didn't have players that were getting discussed. I mean, they didn't have any of that. But when they came into this game, it just looked like they had better preparation. They looked like they wanted it more. They looked like they were just going in and playing their game. I mean, it is nuts because it makes me start to think, was maybe Notre Dame was actually a good team and Clemson just put it to them? I mean, because I know people are going to bring
absolutely,
that up.
Absolutely on that.
Yeah, and I was like, maybe Notre Dame was actually a pretty good team. Because at the time, and I think it was wrong for a lot of people, and myself included, to think, wow, Notre Dame just sucks. No, maybe it was just Clemson was, they just, at going into that college football playoff, they were on a mission. I mean, they only gave up 19 points in the college football playoff combined. 19 points. And it's just something that you don't really see very often. And for Alabama and Nick Saban to have this happen to him, everyone's scratching their heads. And like you said, Tommy, people are having a lot of reactions of saying, oh, okay, what's going on with Nick Saban? What's going on with Alabama? Is there some type of trouble on the horizon for this Crimson Tide program? And I don't think we can even jump to that conclusion or not. But, you know, we sit here and obviously we know a lot about Alabama. We watch a lot of Alabama football this year, and we knew that they were a team that was just setting the world on fire. But it does make you think, is this more about Alabama just not performing well in the game? Or is it maybe more than the fact that Clemson has elevated itself to the same level as Alabama? Because check out this stat. This is what Cole Cubic put out from the SEC Network. Check out this stat. In the last four seasons, Alabama is 55-4, two national titles. Pretty impressive. Clemson, in the last four seasons, 55-4. Two national titles.
Yeah. This is now the best rivalry in college football. Better than the Iron Bowl, better than Bama LSU, better than Michigan Ohio State, better than Oklahoma Texas, better than Florida State. This is the game everybody wants to see. All the people that whine and complain, we don't want to see Clemson, Alabama again. What would you give for part five next year in the championship game?
Which you'll probably get.
Which you probably will get, particularly with, I don't know, who's going to be the quarterbacks of these teams? Same guys.
Same exact guys. Trevor Lawrence was so impressive in this game. And I think, I could be wrong, but I think Dabo Swinney made the right decision in going with Trevor Lawrence over Kelly Bryant this year.
Can you say Heisman front runner already?
Yes. I mean, and here's the thing, too, because I know we're all talking about overreactions and whatnot, but Trevor Lawrence went 20 of 32 yesterday, 347 yards, three touchdowns, no picks. Great stat line. As a true freshman, 19 years old, he was making throws that it was just blowing my mind how accurate he is.
Mm-hmm.
And a true freshman.
Tua is supposed to be that guy, not this guy.
Yeah, no, but Trevor Lawrence, and the craziest thing, too, is as good as Trevor Lawrence was, he has another guy named Justin Ross, His wide receiver had 153 receiving yards on six catches, who's also a true freshman.
Mm-hmm.
And those two guys were making plays right and left.
Fowler went through it. You know, they're like three of the top four wide receivers back with Trevor Lawrence, two of the top four running back. I mean, he kept going through the list of all the returning players.
Etienne's just a sophomore.
Yeah, the running back.
Their offense is not going to be an issue next year. It's the defense where they lose quite a lot.
They're already preseason number one. Go ahead and put the poll out.
Yeah.
Alabama's probably preseason number two for next year. And we're on a collision course once again. Where is it, New Orleans next year?
That's right.
On a collision course for New Orleans and these two teams to play again. And I don't think we'll hear the whining and complaining, fatigue, you know.
These are the two best
teams. These are the two best programs in college football.
And
the problem is...
not close.
Well, but here's the beauty or the problem or however you want to look at it. Which one's better? I don't know. You
got to
settle it on the field because I can't tell you with clear conviction. I thought I could 24 hours ago. Alabama's the better program. Even though I thought Clemson was going to win the game last night. Alabama's still the better program. Nick Saban's the better coach. All of it's in question this morning. Clemson may be the best college football program. Dabo Swinney may be the best college football coach. Not Nick Saban. But it's clear this, whatever you're talking about, those programs, those coaches, those quarterbacks, those everything are one and two. It just depends on your perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is a distant third and beyond.
That's right. And Alabama and Clemson have met the past four seasons in postseason play in the college football playoff. They're 2-2 against each other. Rubber match next year, probably going to happen.
You would be disappointed if it didn't.
Yeah.
If one of them stubbed their toe on the way, lost in the semifinal, or lost in their conference championship game, didn't get in, it would be a bummer at this point.
And honestly, I don't know who else you could point to and say that this team's got a chance next year. I have no idea who it could be. But if these two teams meet again, you can't complain about not getting the two best teams because they are the creme de la creme of college football. That is no doubt.
Arkansas's home for the best sports talk. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Adams with it at the 45. Adams skipping. Adams gets outside. Watch out. Hits the sideline. The Jet. Touchdown, Arkansas.
I'm wearing a Darren McFadden jersey in honor of Darren McFadden making the College Football Hall of Fame.
You are?
Feels like it's only right.
The only concerning thing for me in Ty is it's the same attire you had on last night while watching the game, which makes me wonder, A, did you even go to sleep? And B, did you just sleep in your clothes? Because you're dressed identical to the way you dressed for the game last night.
Yeah, well, you know, last night I had shorts on. And, you know, I have a hat on this morning, so... But yes, the jersey is still the same. But it's okay, though. I sprayed some smell good stuff on it. Sure, she'll be fine, right? It's clean. It's fine. It works. I just have to be in honor of Darren McFadden, the GOAT, the greatest Razorback football player of all time, making it into the College Football Hall of Fame. Got to pay my respects. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, I actually was thinking about this yesterday with McFadden is... He's one of those players that, and maybe you're not the same way as I am, Tommy, but it's just one of those players I feel like you kind of took for granted, and then once he was gone, that's when you truly realized how great he was. You knew he was a great player when he was at Arkansas, don't get me wrong, but when he's gone and you're just like, man, what he was able to do, how he was able to do it, the way that he just carried Arkansas, the entire state on his back, and the story behind him, never taking any other visits to any other schools. A five-star caliber athlete taking no visits. He wanted to go to Arkansas and do what he did. I mean, it was awesome. So couldn't happen to a better Arkansan than Darren McFadden making it into the College Football Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. And I think in most people's opinion, the greatest Razorback football player ever.
I think so.
And probably, without question, top five all-time SEC running back. Certainly since Arkansas joined the league, might be...
I say
the best since 92.
I say he's the best.
We're biased in that, but
find somebody else.
Make me the argument.
Yeah, because I'm sure people will bring up, because Alabama's had some good running backs. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they've had some really Heisman Trophy winning running backs. Derrick Henry, Mark Ingram. They've had some. But as good as those players were, it's just McFadden was explosive. Like, you felt like those running backs were really good, but I didn't see Derrick Henry breaking off 80-yard runs against LSU. I didn't see Derrick Henry throwing touchdown passes out of the wild hog. You know, you just didn't see those plays from the, and not to take anything away from those running backs, because they're really good running backs. But McFadden was a do-it-all type of player where he had speed, top-level speed. It was one of the few times, and this is how I always like to compare it to when people bring up this discussion. It didn't matter who you played. It didn't matter the game. Didn't matter anything. When Arkansas and Darren McFadden stepped on the field, you knew, as a Razorback fan, that you had the best player on the field, no matter who you played. No matter offense, mm-hmm. defense, special teams, whatever. You had the best player on the field. And he had top-level speed. He had top-level strength. His stiff arm was disgusting. He had never avoided contact. He'd run right through you. People got out of his way. I mean, he just had the entire package of a running back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, and another thing that maybe is underrated by McFadden was his stamina. Because I think back to the South Carolina game in 2007 where he rushed for 321 yards. Let me say that again. 321 yards. While Felix Jones also rushed for 180. Not bad games from either one of them. But the biggest play in that game was an 80-yard run that he had to cap it all off late in the game. And one of the remarks that was brought up, I don't know if it was Trevor Maddich, I forgot who the call was on ESPN, but he says, look at him. He's not even breathing hard.
Mm-hmm.
He had just rushed for over 300 yards, and he wasn't even breathing hard after an 80-yard run. So, I mean, he was just the entire package. And for, I mean, obviously, him getting into the College Football Hall of Fame.
Bob Davey.
Obviously, him getting into the College Football Hall of Fame, he said it's not surprising. I mean, he absolutely deserves it. It's just a reminder for Arkansas fans of, you know, you've had some really good players come through here. I think the most disappointing thing about McFadden was the fact that they never really got to a level as a team that they should have. They with McFadden, Felix Jones, and Peyton Hillis on that team, they went 500 in the SEC. I mean, that's not good. And you think back to what could have been with that team and with that offense. It should have been a lot better, and McFadden should have had at least two seasons of top five type years.
Well, you wonder if all of the drama following the 06 season that clearly carried over into the 07 season with Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, we all know that what happened there with Nutt and Gus Malzahn and Springdale 5 and all of that. If all of that had been handled differently, more behind closed doors, less public drama, Malzahn stayed, what would have happened for McFadden's career the following year? Would it have been enough to get the Heisman Trophy? I don't know. Would this team certainly would have won more games?
Arkansas would have played in the national championship game in 07 because the team that did was LSU, the team that they beat, mm-hmm. and had two losses. I think Arkansas was a good enough team, talented enough team to win the SEC that year. And if they would have won the SEC, they would have played Ohio State in the national championship game. Now, obviously, a lot of factors go into that because Missouri and West Virginia at the end of that year were 1-2, and they both lost at the end of the season. So crazy things were happening that college football season. But that's what I'm going back to is I think of that 07 season. The problem with that 07 year is you had talent across the board. I mean, it was amazing how much talent you had. But you lost to Nick Saban team that first year. The Nick Saban was 6-6. They lost to Louisiana Monroe. You lost to Kentucky that year at home. You lost to Auburn 9-7 at home. Like, there was these games that you just look back on and you're like, how? How did this happen? Why did this happen? How did you have three bona fide NFL caliber running backs on that team? Because as good as Darren McFadden had, Peyton Hillis, I've heard people talk about in practices that played for Arkansas, and I had a friend of mine that was actually a walk-on during that time who said that, yeah, McFadden's an awesome player, but he's not the best football player on that team. He said Peyton Hillis was the best football player on that team.
And he could do everything.
Yeah.
I mean, Peyton Hillis,
he's a workhorse.
Yeah.
Whatever. He could block. He could run. He could mm-hmm. do it all. And then you had Felix Jones. I mean, you had three running backs right there that if you just had just an inkling of a passing game, if you were just able to have the threat,
yeah,
there's no telling what that offense could have done, especially with Malzahn, if it would have worked out with him as the offensive coordinator.
They'd have turned him loose.
Yes. They would have turned him loose where you could have had Mitch Mustain develop. You would have had Damian Williams as a wide receiver.
Just think about, though, the change in the history, the change in everything at Arkansas.
Oh, it'd be night and day.
Because you'd have never had Bobby Petrino.
Nope.
And, you know, I don't know that Nutt would still be the head coach at Arkansas after all these years, but it would be interesting to see how history would be rewritten.
I think that Nutt would have either left or retired or something, and then Malzahn would have taken over the reins.
Perhaps. I mean, that's a reasonable thought.
And then if you had Malzahn, you know, what would you be like?
Yeah,
what, I
exactly.
Mean, you wouldn't have gotten Ryan Mallett. Like, I mean, you just think about just the small things in history and how everything can change and where you would be at right now. Yeah. And I think that...
as great a career as McFadden had at Arkansas, you still feel like it could have been more.
Yep. And that was my whole point in all of it, is that as great as it was...
His freshman year could have been more if they'd have put him on the field sooner.
Yep. Because they went 4-7
that year. And recognized his greatness sooner.
Yep. And then the next year, you won the SEC West. It was the only time you outright won the SEC West, where there was another team on probation that is the reason you won it. Like, you straight up won the SEC West. But... you had games and head-scratchers, like that LSU game at the end of the year in Little Rock. It's like you lost. How? I mean,
you stop and think about all of these things we just talked about. And Robbie just sent a note in that I think is spot on. I mean, Houston Nutt right now is living in Dallas, being a second-string studio analyst for CBS, right? Mm-hmm. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate.
Pretty much second string, right?
Yep.
He gets to go to New York and fill in on occasion, but he's pretty much banished to the CBS Sports Network. You know, go find that on cable. If he had handled all of this other stuff more on the up and up, and maybe what we would deem as correctly in 06 and less drama, and gotten out of there in 07, probably would have continued his coaching career. Like you said, perhaps maybe Malzahn becomes head coach. What do you think would have happened with Houston Nutt? Robbie just sent in a note, and he's right.
Athletic director?
AD.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of sitting down there in Dallas.
Probably. And people
being
would not,
second string on
and
CBS.
People would not have
a bad gig. Don't get me wrong.
No, but people would not have the disdain towards Houston Nutt like they do still to this day because of the handling of that situation.
Yeah,
and that's what makes it so disappointing, is because you think back to what could have been, not only in those years, but going forward in Arkansas football. Because listen, I don't think anybody hated Houston Nutt or wanted Houston Nutt gone because he was just. I mean, he wasn't a good coach. Or it was the other stuff that he felt like he and his problems and his ego was keeping the program from getting to a level that it needed to be. That whole Gus Malzahn, it was doomed from the start.
Well,
and it was just
high school.
Yeah, like you had the high school stuff. You had the letters where, or the emails that Teresa Pruitt, Danny Nutt's therapist, was sending to Mitch Mustain, like with homophobic slurs. You had, you know, where who was that email was getting forwarded among the wives of coaches. Like, you just had so many things going on where it's just like, how come y'all just can't play football? How come y'all just can't worry about winning?
All of it handled right, Houston Nutt could be the second biggest figure in the history of the program behind Frank Broyles.
Yes, he could be.
As far as football.
Because he was an Arkansas guy.
It could be Frank, Nolan, and Houston Nutt.
Yep.
If all that had been different, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, especially if they would have played for a national title, which I think they had a really good shot at doing. Like, could you imagine now what Houston Nutt would be looked at if he would have played for a national title in 07 like they should have?
But we started this conversation with McFadden. Where would Houston Nutt be if McFadden had never become a Razorback?
Oh. I've said this the whole time. There is only two players that you can give credit for Houston Nutt and the why he was at Arkansas so long. Matt Jones and Darren McFadden.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for those two players, I think Houston Nutt would have not made it for 10 years at Arkansas.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
Here's what Nick Saban had to say with the reasons that they lost the national championship game.
You know, we had some issues. We couldn't get off the field on third down. We gave up a couple big-time explosive plays on third down and 13, third down and 9. You know, we had plenty of opportunities to score offensively, have the ball at the one-yard line, get a penalty, end up kicking a field goal, have it down there a couple more times. Do a fake field goal and go for it on fourth down and don't make it, get stopped on a goal line on a 1 yard line another time.
He pretty much just summed it up as they couldn't get in the red zone. When they got in the red zone, they couldn't do anything with it. When they were in scoring position, they couldn't do anything on the scoring side of things. It just seemed like everything that they were trying to do and things that you would normally chalk up to an Alabama team being able to accomplish, mm-hmm. they were unable to do.
Tyler, the most interesting thing and most surprising thing I saw was Alabama not once but twice got stuffed on fourth and less than a yard.
Yeah.
You don't ever see that with Alabama.
Well, Brent Venables is, you know, I think he's a former Broyles Award winner a couple years ago and you know, been in the state, and a lot of people talked about him as maybe being a guy that we would go after and try to get here at Arkansas due to some relationships. But you know, Brent Venables is probably gets the game ball last night. I would say, you know, I mean, obviously you got Tua, you got all the firepower Alabama has offensively, and you totally stonewall them. Not only in, you know, third down situations, not only on the goal line situations, but really all facets of the game. It looked like you were always, you know, one step ahead. And you know, you talk about the goal situations, the 1 yard line, you know, the one to go situations. And I thought Brent did an amazing job. And then the players on the field, obviously, but Clemson definitely dominated the line of scrimmage. Up front and in those situations.
I don't know how much. I know you've probably seen some highlights. You said you were on a flight last night. I don't know how much of you got to see, but Tua throws that early pick that really set the tone for the game. I've wondered since that last night and seeing the outcome how much different the game might be if that play doesn't happen. But what did you see on that play? And Tua, who's considered one of the most accurate passers we've seen in recent years, throws what seems to be a pretty simple pass out there, and it gets taken to the house.
You know, two of the last five games of the season, four or five games of the season, not the same player. Not the same player at all. And that's what's weird. You know, it since the Jalen Hurts deal, just seems like he's been a little bit off. And I think maybe more the ankle thing than the Jalen Hurts deal. But, you know, he's not had the zip on the ball that I've seen. The ball seems to be slowly getting to, you know, its end point. It doesn't have the revolutions that it's had before. I don't know. I think there's something there maybe with his push-off, his second-guessing. But early in the season, you would see crisp, clean decision-makings. I think he's been bruised up, banged up a little bit, and he's not as confident delivering the football in certain things. That particular throw was behind the receiver. It was an out pattern, a simple out pattern of which it was read by the defender. But the reason it was picked off is because the ball was thrown behind him and it didn't have a lot of velocity on it. And it was, you know, a heck of a play by the defender, and he jumps behind the receiver and takes it. Was it 44 yards? I think is what the total was there. So. Yeah, big time play early to set the tone.
Yeah, and gave Clemson a big shot of adrenaline, and they said, hey, you know, the mentality is, yeah, we can do this. You know, and then they went, that's a great first quarter where they just went blow for blow there. You know, landing haymakers, it seemed like.
Yeah. You know, I think that's the key with Alabama. You got to get them on their heels, and mm-hmm. they certainly did. But Tua, back to him, and I think, you know, I don't know what you chalk it up to, but I think the ankle thing has been a big challenge for him moving forward with reps, with pain, dealing with all of the exhausting things that go on with the Heisman Trophy. You know, they talk about the curse, but definitely, you know, I know he's probably had to deal with a lot of that over the last month and a half that made him, you know, maybe affected him a little bit.
Yeah. In fairness, he throws the pick six, then he comes back and he throws a beauty down the field and answers right back. So, you know, it didn't seem to stumble him. He was clearly on the sideline saying, that's on me, you know, talking about that interception, but they answered right back. But very interesting to see how that game began last night, because it was not the normal Alabama-esque start that we normally see, and certainly not the kind of performance out of Tua that we've seen at all this year with two interceptions in the game.
John, you got to have the stat somewhere, right? I mean, they've scored on every possession. I think until like the last three or four games of the year.
The opening possession on every
game. So within like the first 3 minutes.
Yeah, they seemed like they were out of sorts. Just I know from the get-go, obviously throwing a pick six, it's not the way you want to start. But when they responded, I guess I at least felt like, okay, so this is going to be one of those types of games where, you know, when one team makes a play, the other one comes right back and makes a play. But that didn't end up being the case. And I think that not enough can be said by the play by Trevor Lawrence, the true freshman for Clemson. I mean, not only did he go into this game and throw 327 yards, three touchdowns, no picks, completed 69% of his passes, but if you just look at what he was able to do on the season, again, a 19-year-old kid, true freshman, he threw for 3,200 yards, 30 touchdowns, only four interceptions, completing 65% of his passes as a true freshman.
But the way he played, a true freshman played last night, and you're not a true freshman at this point, but
right.
But the way he played against Alabama, that's not supposed to happen, guys.
No. It's supposed to be the dual threat, Johnny Manziel, Cam Newton type of quarterbacks that do that.
Right. You're supposed to wilt in that kind of environment against a Nick Saban Alabama defense loaded with five stars. That's pretty amazing what he did.
You know, guys, we saw last year a true freshman come in the national championship game, which is Tua, and turn the entire game around. And, you know, everybody's throwing their hands in the air going, you know, Tua's the next guy. And he had an unbelievable season, should have won the Heisman Trophy, et cetera. But when I look at it, this situation's much different. This wasn't a freshman coming in the biggest game of the year, late in the game, you know, and making a difference. This is a guy all year long, from the first day he was on campus, beating out a guy that's had a national championship experience as a quarterback, beating out the other player.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's been on campus 2 months, and he beats a guy that's played the national championship out of the position and has gone on, you know, the rest of the year and had a phenomenal season. And then you watch his performance last night. I don't know how you can argue. And, of course, they're not going to give him the Heisman because he's, you know, he's a true freshman. But, I mean, phenomenal performance all the way around. And we talked about last year Tua changing the expectation of freshmen. This is the changing of the expectation
right.
of freshmen.
Yeah.
And he's clearly the front runner for the 2019 Heisman.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, you got two more years of this guy at Clemson, that's for sure. So let's go to the phone lines. Jerry's in Huntington. What's going on, Jerry?
Oh, how you guys doing? Appreciate me. You guys let me be on radio.
Of course.
I think the problem is Saban. If you look back, even when Arkansas played him, you know, Arkansas wasn't that good. We didn't have that good a team. We played, you know, we scored points on him. He was having a fit. They're blowing us out. And he's having a fit. Every game, when they do good, he's having a fit on the sidelines. And I think that's the problem. The boys are just tired of being chewed on.
Well,
you got to learn to be a motivator, not be a chewing on people all the time.
To your point, Jerry. If you go back to the game against Georgia, where he threw the headset.
And it broke.
And it broke everywhere. There was a player that had come off the field that he is just totally up in their face. Totally. And the player just keeps walking like he's not even talking. And I thought that was an interesting moment that no one's really spent a lot of time on. The fact that Saban is just coming unhinged, and it's like he's not even speaking.
Yeah, I know. He's not... You've got to learn to work with the boys. He's not like Lou Holt. He was a motivator. Lou Holt.
Guys,
he can take a team and not have a lot, and he can make a good team out of them.
We're talking about a guy that's 55-4.
Yeah, I was about
to say. Over the last four seasons, what are we talking about here?
I don't think one game defines or has what's Nick Saban, where all of a sudden now it becomes an issue
he's the greatest
chewing out players.
College football coach in the history of the sport.
Yeah, and he only knows one way to do things, and that's his way. And
right.
I get how it may come across, because here's the thing. If last night, if Alabama wins the title, then this, you know, it's not even something that gets brought up. But I just think that if he has one way of doing things, and it's obviously been successful the past 4 years where they've gone 55-4 and won two national titles, then, I mean, that's good enough for everybody else. Mm-hmm. Not saying that everyone responds the same way, but... of all the things criticize Nick Saban for, I don't know if that's the one you want to go with.
But I did find it interesting in that game you've seen it more. The player just keeps going to the bench, pay no attention.
Well, you know, and not to totally dismiss what we're talking about, because I do think it has merit. But you know, I pause for those that want to jump off the Nick Saban bandwagon as he's 55-4 and the greatest college football coach in the history of our generation, and you know, there's two differences. You saw Dabo Sweeney, right, who does it one way, much more positive than Nick Saban, and then you got the other side of the fence watching Nick throw, you know, headsets around.
Yeah.
So there's two ways to do it. There's no question. But one of the things that I want us to to be aware of is that, you know, there's a record there that offsets
it. Oh, no question.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, though, what you could take away from last night is, was the fight there from Alabama that you've seen in the past, in the second half, and it clearly wasn't.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.